episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor today, and this is We the People Radio, might add, just in case.
Just for the heck of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And our sponsor today is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They've got a great stock of mowers and tractors right now. Go up there and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226. They'll take care of your service needs, your parts needs. They do it all up there. Or you can catch them on the web at PapeMachinery.com.
So do people plan ahead and fix their tractors when it's raining?
No, but we get a lot of people that call in and want to know how to fix their tractors because they, I guess, are saving their Christmas money.
Well, they've got time. They've got time, so they're going to learn how to fix the tractor themselves. How many do you get to fix after they fix it?
Oh, most of them, yeah. Yeah. Usually it's not a good plan.
So bottom line is stop doing that out there. Just take it to the shop.
Take it in, pay the bill, and you'll be much, much happier.
You could live happily ever after. Yeah. Well, all right. So today we are talking about Iran and the uprisings there. And it's something that's kind of getting buried, I think, in the news cycle. It's not, I don't know, at least over here. I'm sure it's buried even deeper. They don't want anybody to know.
No, keep it on the down low.
Kind of like China. We're talking about China a little bit, but for some reason, letting things progress in Iran, we keep meddling in that. But our guests today, Hamid Azimi and Fred Desmalchiel, decode that for us. Fred's been on a couple of times. Let's see. First time we had Fred on, oh my gosh, August of 2016.
Wow, it's been that long?
Yep, way back in the time machine. And he was the first one to kind of give us the heads up. I met him at an event down in Sacramento, and I wound up chatting with him and a friend of his who is no longer with us. He was a lovely man, too. And I thought, gee, you know, people should know about this. This is something that's kind of being, I don't know if it's just being buried or, you know, just with the volume of ridiculous news or if it's something they don't want Americans to know. Kind of my guess goes that way. But Hamid has a short time with us because there's a big protest today. I won't blow it and tell you all about it. I'll let him do it. But he is the communications director of the Iranian American Communities of Northern California. And you can find all of that at wethepeopleradio.us, the information on both these guys and on the event today that is happening. It is December 4th, 2022, in case we re-air this. All right, fellas, I'm guessing we're going to start with Hamid.
Hello, Aaron and Fred. So glad that you guys have given us a chance to talk to you and through you to all of your wonderful listeners.
Yeah, the timing was terrific, actually. Well, not terrific in that you have to leave halfway through, but great in that today is the day of the protest. So I don't know how you want to introduce that to people, but feel free to go any direction you'd like.
Right. So let me just start by saying that we are the representing our community, which is the Iranian American Community of Northern California. And we have been active in this area for a good 25 years now. And people who are the member of this community, just like me and Fred, are the people who have ended up seeing the United States as part of their educational migration, and we are obviously enjoying this social and political freedom that this great country offers, and both of us, both me and Fred, have sent kids to school, universities, and they are gone and off, you know, houses and family and kids, and American dream of freedom and liberty, which is something that we are struggling to bring about in our country of birth, Iran, as well. And I think regardless of how the mainstream media has done its best to go with the policies that are being dictated to them by the administration, more than anything else, I should say, that the regime change and the democratic change in Iran is not necessarily something that you want to have in front of people every day and every night. For the last 40 years, people of Iran have been struggling to fight the new version of dictatorship that has been oppressing them. Before that, there was 50 years of Shah's dictatorship, and before that, there was the previous Shah. So all in all, for the last 120 years or so, the Iranian people have gone through different revolutions, different uprisings, and it's all for the good old freedom, freedom of expression, freedom of choice that we are still fighting for. And the last 40, the last 80 days, I should say, is we've been in the middle of what is now known as the New Iran Revolution. It started, as your listeners most likely have heard, by the vicious death of Mahsa Amini, who was a Kurdish girl, and Kurdistan is the western part of, eastern part of Iran, and different type of ethnicity there. Iran is a huge country. So this young girl was visiting Tehran, which is the capital, and she was harassed and tortured by the what is called the morality police for the way she was wearing her head covering, the head covering that has been forced upon people of Iran. And she was beaten on the head, as far as the reports go, and she ended up dying and acting as the ignition that exploded the power kick of 40 years of repression within that society, especially when it comes to women who have been the target of all of the oppression and repression in Iran for the last 40 years under this Islamic fundamentalist fascist or ruling them. And with that ignition, the country started seeing different rallies, demonstrations. It went on and on, and now that we are talking today on the 80th day of this new wave of revolution, there does not seem to be any sign of slowing down, and people are still on this, in the streets. The universities are igniting. The rallies are getting down to the primary school levels. And people who have fallen for this cause, the numbers are getting close to 700 people. Iran has 31 provinces, and we have seen rallies in all of these 31 provinces, in all areas in the country. And the people who have fallen, at least 60 or maybe even more of those, have been underage children, 18 and under. The youngest has been a 2-year-old who ended up dead because, you know, mom and dad were part of the rally and being shot at. Up to, you know, other kids, 16, 17, 18. And if the listeners just do a search on the internet for the Iran Revolution, I would see gut-wrenching images of how people are being shot at and how things are bad for the people. But regardless of that, they are on the street, they are fighting their own fight. And today in San Francisco, we are having a photo exhibit showing the images of these people who have fallen, showing the image of a young kid called Nikon, who was 9 or 10 years old, and he was shot dead in the street. And this kid, from all the reports, all of the little clips that his family have shared on the internet, he was a genius. He was an inventor. He had, or at least two videos that I have seen where Keon is explaining little things that he has invented. One little boat that he has made, and he is displaying how it's working. A little robot that he has put together with a plastic cup and a battery and a little engine that turns it around, and with four pencils that he has taped around the cup, and it moves on a piece of paper and sketches things. And these are the kind of resources, for lack of any other words, resources that are being abolished, they are being eliminated in Iran in this grand war that is going on between the people and the vicious government. And I know that Fred has a lot more information that he wants to share, but before I end this little long introduction, let me just add one point that your listeners, I know they care about it. I know they are concerned about it. But one thing that I want to add to what they know, what they are concerned about, is that this world of us is now a little village. And especially after, you know, the corona experience that the entire world went through, we should all realize that what really happens in any corner of this little blue planet that we have has its direct effect on all of us. And, you know, the farmer in California with the tractor problem that I completely agree should take to a mechanic, as was discussed at the beginning of your show, is and will be affected if there is another war in the Middle East, is and will be affected if there is no lasting peace in the Middle East, and United States and allies will have to go about doing business the way we have done in the previous century. In this century, you know, we should focus on peace and stability, and with a pre-democratic, non-nuclear republic in Iran, there's not going to be any chance of death to this and death to that. And everybody who looks at the situation knows that with a free, democratic, nuclear-free republic in Iran, the entire face of the Middle East is gonna change, and that would benefit all of the states in the United States. That would benefit all of us in California. That would definitely benefit the farmers that we have in this great state.
Yeah, it's a. I was looking at the information I had posted for you on the last show, and just to remind people that Iran is a country with 2/3 of its population under the age of 30. I mean, that's really notable, and you're going to take those people and put them under your thumb. And I'm thinking, holding the 30 and younger crowd under your thumb has got to be quite the challenge, which is probably why they really love all these deals that our country likes to cut with them. You know, the Iran nuclear deal and all that. I think that was one of the early things that we spoke with you about, because, you know, when you don't live in those countries and you don't maybe have a good connection, you think, well, the people in that country would be in favor of that. And to find out that, no, the people that are in favor of it are the government, so they can hold the people down. It's like, what? Wait a second. So then you look at what our government is doing, and I'll never forget it. When Fred and Ross told us, they said, look, what we really want the U.S. to do is just nothing. Just please stop doing it. stop doing everything. Just leave us alone and let us get this figured out, because the revolution was happening then, too, was getting started. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back and chat a little bit more with Hamid and Fred. Fred is with us the second hour. Hamid's got to do communications directorness with the protest, I think. So we're going to lose him partway through, so we're going to soak up his information while we can. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Them. When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
And we're back. All right, Hamid, tell me this. Okay, having a you're showing pictures there. That was part of the, I guess, the challenge today was if it was raining, you were going to have to call it off because of all the photographs. But displaying all these photographs in Union Square in San Francisco, I realize exposing the issue is, I'm sure, the ultimate goal. But why there? And what do you hope to what do you guys hope to achieve from that?
Great question, and Aaron, let me continue by, you know, piggybacking on what you mentioned before the break about the young generation in Iran, and point out to your listeners that for the last 40 years, which means the length of the life of these young people in Iran, they've been dealing with a regime that every week in the Friday prayers, think of it as just like, you know, people going to church here on Sunday, the Friday prayers that they go and they want to listen to some spiritual guidance, listening to the people who are going to tell, show them good from bad and values that, you know, we want to pass on to the next generation. In Iran, what has happened is that the chance of death to America has been one cornerstone of all of these Friday prayer sermons that, you know, started within the universities, and they would gather people, and now with the, you know, in the age of internet, they are broadcasting it as live broadcasts, you know, Twitter accounts, Instagram accounts, whatever the government feels that is good for them. They use it to spread things like that. And from that perspective, it's amazing that in the past that we have started seeing this wave of revolution in Iran with different chants in the streets that they are calling for the downfall of the regime. We are very, very pointed slogans such as death to Khamenei, who is the supreme leader, who is the, you know, the head of the one-man show that they have in Iran. They are calling for his death. They are calling or, you know, bring death to oppressor, be it the Shah or the leader, pointing to the old dictatorship and the new dictatorship. And there has never, ever been one call of death to America in the past 80 days. There has not been one call, one chance that U.S. stop sanctions on the Ayatollah. there has not been even one call that says, U.S., come help with your military. Nothing of that sort, which basically ties to what you mentioned, that what people of Iran are saying to the world is that we are, as a nation, as a young nation, we are ready and willing to pay the price for our freedom. Nothing unlike what the country has done. Nothing unlike what, you know, I have learned in this great country about how a different generation had to pick up arms and fight for freedom, fight for independence, and rightfully so, you know, generation after generation, Americans are and will honor the memory of all of those people who gave their life for independence in this country. For us in Iran, it's nothing different. We have a generation that is out in the street trying to do its best to pay the price for the independence of Iran, so that Iran will become something that, you know, my nieces and nephews and, you know, my family who is left behind will be able to start enjoying the type of social and economical freedom that the rest of the world, and especially in this country, we are experiencing. So part of the reason that we are in the streets of San Francisco, and if, you know, there was any other place that we could go, we would do it in an instance. We are out here to show these faces. These are not just names. These are just not numbers that we say 700 people have died. These are 700 families. These are 700 fathers, 700 mothers, 700 sons and daughters, 700 cousins, 700 siblings, 700, you know, neighborhoods that have lost a loved one. And for everybody to know that there is actually things that could be done to help these people. The nations, countries do not live in bubbles anymore the way it was the previous, you know, 200 years ago. There is, you know, fact, and it was possible to do something in a corner of the world, and the rest of the world would not find out about it for sometimes years. And things have changed. Things are different.
Yeah, those days are over.
Absolutely. And things are connected to each other. Farmers in California are affected by any war in the Middle East. And they know they feel it better than I would ever be able to do. Businesses in California are affected by what happens in Ukraine. And we can all see and feel it right now. When pandemic happened, which was a global disaster, everybody got affected. So what is happening in Iran does have its effect. And obviously, you know, like, part of what we want to do is send this message to the people who are in different administrations, that these administrations also have a duty. You mentioned about how they, you know, they want to keep on negotiating with the Ayatollahs and make a deal. But, you know, from day one, as I'm sure you have heard from Fred and my friend Ross, and his soul rest in peace forever, that the negotiation is when, ever since that it started, it was basically closing the eyes on the real war that was going on between the religious fascist dictatorship and a nation of 50, 60, 70 million lives after 80 million people. This war obviously has two sides. One side is the dictator ruling Iran. The other side is Iran. Just like the war that is happening, the world is witnessing in Ukraine. Everybody knows that the two sides, one side is an invading dictator, the other side is, you know, a nation, people. And at a point, countries in the modern world, especially the United States, which is the number one economical and military force in the world, gotta decide that taking side from one side to the other side is gonna make a difference. If U.S. takes the side of Vladimir Putin in the war that is going on in Ukraine, obviously things are gonna change in a completely different direction. When the United States is and should taking the side of the people of Ukraine, we see things moving at the right direction, at the direction of honoring what the people want, honoring what it should be in terms of a nation that has come to the street and is defending its homeland. And this is exactly what we are asking for Iran and the people of Iran. Enough is enough by closing our eyes, and I'm talking these eyes of the administrations, on the fact that people of Iran have been suffering at the same time, have been struggling any way they could in bringing about democratic change in their own hands. They are not here. They are not asking us to send an army to freedom. But what they are asking for is that when taking side is the issue, do not take the sides of the Ayatollahs. Do not present them as some entity that, you know, you can negotiate with. There are no negotiations to these people, especially when it comes to the streets in Iran. So taking that side is going to make a huge difference. And we also have very, very specific recommendations for the administration that I'll be more than happy to talk about after I let you give me your thoughts at this moment.
Well, I posted Mrs. Rajavi's 10-point plan. I always post that on each show we do with you guys because I think that's a real wake-up call for people around the world who are unfamiliar with the revolution. A lot of times, you know, a lot of times revolution is just revolution, and it's just going to lead to another bad regime, and there's not really a plan sometimes. And this actually is very well thought out, and the only thing preventing it is the rest of the world sticking its nose in it and propping these guys up because they don't have the support of the bulk of the country.
One of the stories that's come out just recently is that the regime has abolished the morality police, and it's viewed as some sort of a concession to the protesters. Do you think that's going to make any difference on the ground as far as the people of Iran?
Do you think anybody believes that?
Exactly. What do you think the effect of that's going to be?
I'm so glad you mentioned this last thing.
Let
me start by saying that you're absolutely right about the people of Iran having a leadership in Mrs. Rajavi and her 10-point plan for the future. But that future is a future that we cannot get to until we get rid of this regime. And getting rid of this regime is really the key factor here. And as I mentioned earlier, the slogans that people are shouting in the streets really defines what they want. In the recent weeks, you know, whenever I've had a chance to discuss these with different people, friends, media, I have provided this example that when, if I go to San Francisco and if I see it, a group of people are rallying, and if I just hear, without even reading any of their signs, if I just hear they say, "My body, my choice," it becomes extremely clear for me what that group represents. It doesn't matter what my beliefs are, right? It will tell me exactly what that group stands for and what is it that they are out in the street asking for. It's exactly the same in the streets of Iran. People are shouting, "Death to Khamenei, death to dictator, death to the oppressor, be it the Shah or the leader, rejecting any kind of dictatorship." So the news that broke out today that the regime has abolished the morality police. First thing first, that report is really not accurate. What has really happened is that the head of the judiciary in Iran has basically said that we don't have anything to do with this. And it has said that the entity that started the morality police will stop it itself, which basically tells me that they are not taking responsibility. They are passing the buck, and they are really not serious about it. And at the same time, the same judiciary has announced that they are executing people in Iran today for their crime of being against the will of God, and which is, you know, the term that they use, anybody who opposes them. So on that day, on the same day, they are executing people, and the same judiciary has told in the extensive interview that was there that what he is saying about the morality police has nothing to do with the people who are in the street and who are using a non-violent technique against the regime, which means that, you know, you're getting shot at, and if you are setting the police stand that is shooting at you, we are going to catch you and we are going to execute you. So, all in all, the news is not really accurate. And at the same time, from what we have seen in the streets of Iran, my prediction, which is not just a prediction, it's, you know, based on the solid facts that we know about what is going on in Iran, this is going to be fuel added to the revolution that is going on. The first couple of weeks of this new wave of revolution, some maybe 2 months ago, I was asked by politicians here in San Francisco if there was, what was the prediction in whether or not what was, you know, 2-3 weeks old uprising would carry on. And my answer back then, which is my answer today, was that the reason that we are seeing a revolution in Iran, it's not just because Mahsa Amini was brutally murdered. It's because that there has been 40 years of repression, 40 years of oppression, 40 years of women being repressed in every way possible so that they become second-class citizens. That has been going on for 40 years. That has not changed and is not going to change. So the revolution will go on. the other factor. Everybody who is paying attention to the detail of the news out of Iran the last 80 days, there has been consistently reports that the group of young people who come to the streets and they are setting, you know, fires and they are really fighting the oppressors. They are young, they are organized, and there are numerous reports within Iran and in different publications in U.S. that points out how these organized group of kids seem to have had some sort of training and they know what they are doing. And they point out to the fact that it was not out of the blue that 24 hours after Nasser Ali's death, which was September 16th, so on September 17th, 2022, throughout Iran, everybody was shouting the same slogans. Everybody was acting the same way. So all in all, everything points to the fact that the Iranian nation has put together a plan. These young kids who are organized, which we refer to them as resistance units. These resistance units throughout Iran have a plan, and they are not going to be stopped, just like they have not been stopped the last 80 days, no matter what the government has done, no matter what government has promised them, or no matter how much force and pressure that the government put on them, they are moving forward and they will keep on moving forward. So, short answer to your question, you know, this ploy that the government has in announcing that they're going to eliminate the morality police is not going to work. It's not going to slow the people up. Down, and if anything, they will be pointing at it as a huge success, not in negotiating with the Ayatollahs, not with, you know, setting back, understanding that what they have done in the last 80 days is actually working, which means there should be more attacks on the government, more resistance, and more activity and support for the brave resistance units that are igniting this fire throughout Iran.
Yeah, I think it's actually sort of amusing that a bunch of backward, angry old men are going to try to stop the under 30 crowd from communicating. I don't care what country you're in, that's just sort of like, I think you're probably not going to win. So
I think it's actually just on a social level, just
a failed plan on their part.
Out of touch.
They don't know that they've lost. They have to be notified. Let's we've got to take one more quick break. We'll come right back. We are discussing the revolution in Iran, and I hope people are on Twitter following the Organization of Iranian American Communities. There's some great photos on there today. We'll be right back.
Just like everybody else. Pressure. You've only had to run so far, so good. But you will come to a place where the only thing you feel are loaded guns in your face, and you'll have to deal with pressure.
In the streets with our children and our feet.
Okay, so on the break, I was looking at some of the pictures at the Capitol. Is that the same format you're doing in San Francisco?
So in Capitol, you know, our colleagues there had the liberty of being able to use the wonderful, you know, lawn area in front of the Capitol building, and for us here, we haven't been able, in all honesty, a suitable same type of area that has traffic, foot traffic, if you want to talk to people as we are doing that. And here we have decided to do similar type of thing in the corner of Powell Street and Post Street, where there is enough area for us to spread out as many pictures as we can, and also put on display a couple of items. One has to do with Keon that I mentioned, the 9-year-old, 10-year-old inventor, which we want to highlight. We have one of our community members has replicated the boat that he has invented and is showing off in a family video. And the other thing that we are going to do is do a silent performance of what happened to another person who was killed in the uprising. His name was Khodanur, and a couple of months before the uprising, in the scuffles that he had with the security forces, he gets arrested and tortured, and then he asks for water from them. And instead of providing water to the person that they have arrested and they are torturing, they had tied him up into a pole, and they have put a cup of water out of his reach, and they had left him there, and they had the audacity to take a picture of him in that position and putting it on the social media that they have access to in the internal one, because they are blocking internet for other people. And in order to intimidate people and put fear in the heart of people that they should not be opposing the Ayatollahs. And fast forward, you know, we get into the 80 days of uprising that we had. So we are doing what we can in San Francisco today, and we are hoping that, you know, media would show up and do what you are doing in amplifying our voice to the American people, that we are asking for help in terms of not having another war, not sending troops, but helping the people of Iran in what they are doing, reaching out to elected officials and letting them know that simple condemnations are not good enough. They never were, and they are especially not good enough right now that for 80 days people of Iran have been out in the street. The you know, simplest way that it makes, or I should say doesn't make sense for me on what the administration is doing, you do not go about condemning what Russia is doing in Ukraine. You know, you condemn the first couple of days, and then after that, when there is a war, you have to take sides.
You got to move on.
Understand.
Yeah.
You got to move on.
That's
and
an excellent point.
You got to understand that, yeah, and you cannot just stay back and say, I have condemned this, and I'm not going to send any arms to the Ukrainian side, even though they're part of NATO, but I'm not going to get involved. And I'm just going to keep on condemning. When it comes to Iran, we are only hearing condemnations. Again, the request is not to send money, it's not to send arms, it's not to send troops. Iran is a huge country. We have enough oil, money, and you know, guns in the country, that we do not need any of that. But what is missing is that political support. And to be very, very specific, people of Iran have the right to self-defense and regime change.
Mm-hmm.
This is the political right that has been denied for them. We do not hear administrations talking about people of Iran who are in the streets have the right to self-defense. They have the right to topple this regime. What we are hearing is that, oh, we have stopped negotiations with the Ayatollah and we are condemning what they are doing. No, you do not condemn. You know, this is way past that. So the policy where the policy needs to change is before anything, before we can actually get the administration to do the right thing, is to ask our elected officials, our members of Congress, our senators, to step up and to basically say, you know what, after 80 days of ongoing revolution by this young generation in Iran, we are not only condemning the oppressors, we are saying that people of Iran, we are with you. You have the right to self-defense. You have the right to eliminate this regime. And this really ties into what you mentioned, Aaron, that this is not just something that came about today. We have an organized resistance led by a woman with a solid plan of, you know, a democratic, secular, non-republic Iran that will, you know, abide by international law. It will follow the whatever United Nations has to offer in terms of peace and equality. It believes in the two-state solution for the Palestinian-Israeli problem. It's not calling for annihilation of any country. It is not going to chant death to America. And if anything, it's going to, you know, create huge markets in the Middle East. A peaceful Middle East will create huge markets for the United States and for the free market economy in the world. Keep in mind, you know, I am old enough to remember the 1979 revolution in Iran, which was stolen by the Ayatollah and turned into this religious fundamentalist movement. And we saw in the Middle East, we saw quite a few countries that turned the wrong way and went after becoming fundamentalist, religious, you know, backward regime. This time around, in 2022, it's democratic change in Iran with the guidelines that Mrs. Adavi has provided in her 10-point plan for the future of Iran will create a democratic republic in Iran that will correct that wrong turn that the Middle East had in 1979.
And you just wouldn't think it'd be so hard to sell that. You know, it's amazing that the support isn't just 100% from our country. That it's just ridiculous.
We're going to get everybody. We need everybody's help. And I'm just going to drop off after this. So,
all right.
Thank you so much for your time. And I'll leave the rest of the discussion to the in the capable hands of Fred, and thank you again to you and your team over there and to all of your listeners.
Thanks a million.
For listening to me and for your continued support.
Thanks, and great success to you. We'll be right back. We're going to talk to our friend Fred Dosmalchi. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, we have a sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. And they're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer, and they'll do anything John Deere. They'll also
work. Stop at anything. I was all excited.
Well, no, John Deere, and they will work on other brands of tractors. They got a fully staffed service department up there. They got a great inventory of machines right now. The shortages are slowly coming to an end in tractor land, but they do have a good inventory right now. Go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake. And you can give them a call, 226-9226, or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you live in the Reading area, I was going to do I didn't plan my free advertisement of the week, but I got to say Nicolette Glass does a great job. You call them, they answer the phone. That right there is
a real person?
Yeah, a human. Human answers the phone, which is fantastic. And if you need stuff, they come out and do it. I had them put some of those screens that block the sun because our windows are getting blown out from the heat, the seal. So they're replacing some of the windows. Some of those were off by, can you imagine, a 16th of an inch mattered. They had to rebuild them. They had to remake them because it turned out when they had been replaced before, they were measured incorrectly, not by them. And so they were like, no problem, we'll get them to you. Holy cow, that was 10 days ago. They got them remade. They're coming out this week. Their phone number is 530-222-3515. They do screens. Oh, they fixed the sliding glass door, too. The sliding part, I thought it was probably the wheels, the little wheels on the bottom of sliding doors always screw up. And the nice young man who came out said, nope, it's not the wheels. He goes, it's the track. There's like a little thing in the track, fixed it. I don't know what it cost me, $15 or something. So they do all sorts of stuff like that. And so if you're having window issues and you think, oh, this is going to cost me an arm and a leg, and you live anywhere in the Reading vicinity, you should call Nicolette Glass, 530-222-3515. Their nice folks will come right out, take a look at it, and fix it for you. So there you have it. All right, swerving back to Iran. And I think most people kind of overlook it. We talk a lot about China in the world. We you know, hear a lot about Russia. We never know what's real, what's fake. But a long time ago, I just was so struck at an event that I attended where I met Fred and his friend Ross, and they were telling me all about the reality of their country and how modern it used to be. And I guess, I don't know, most of us don't go to the Wayback Machine and look at pictures of the past, but boy, if you look back into the 70s, you know, the idea of women wearing bikinis in Iran, you're like, oh, I'm sure that never happened. No, it happened. They were super, super modern, and the Islamic fundamentalist guys took over and just, I was going to say turned the place upside down, but not really. They just shrunk it. They took all the freedom away, made it all one size fits all, and you speak out, you pay heavily for that. And it's starting to fall apart for them, I think, in a big way. But Fred, I remember you telling us a long time ago that during that first Iran deal with President Obama, that if they gave them all that money, that they did, but they were planning on it. And he said, please, whatever you do, don't give them all that money and make that deal, because when you do, they're going to kill all of our political prisoners. Nothing's really changed since then, has it? I mean, that's still the thing.
Hi,
Fred.
That's Monty. Hi, good afternoon. Thank you, Aaron, and thank you, Bill. I appreciate it. You know, you let us talk and about the human rights and about freedom in Iran. I really appreciate it. And also, thank you also for mentioning about my friend Ross a couple of times earlier today. And I thank you so much. But as you know, I'm a human rights activist. And what we're trying to do in general, which Hamid talked about it, we're trying to be voice for the young Iranian and the woman. And absolutely, you're right. The Iranian government, since last 40 years, they destroy everything in Iran.
They're trying to destroy the culture, environmental, I mean, economy. And not only in Iran, they expand this destruction on its full area. You will see in the foreign policy what they have done in the Middle East. You will see what they have done in practically in Syria, in Lebanon, in Iraq. In all that area, practically they have bad influence or the proxy of the Iranian government in that area. Therefore, as you mentioned about during the Obama administration, when they did the first negotiation, practically they provide a lot of cash, practically, and they, I know you heard about it, they are sending by the airplane to the Iranian government. And he mentioned that is not going to help Iranian people. That money actually will provide more power to Iranian Islamic Guard and practically Iranian Revolutionary Guard and also to the Basiji. And based on that time, that was our input. And now when we're looking back, you'll see that money, they didn't expend any money for the Iranian people. That money went all the way to practically damage to that area and make their own proxy military and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard make it stronger. And they spend more money and practically but keep it hiding, but they keep expanding the nuclear activity. And they went, and also now you can see that money practically not expending a lot of research, a lot of money on the drone. And you will see the impact of the drone right now, how much expansion that Iran has been done. And practically that's because of in that time we're trying to appease mullahs, and based on that appeasement, practically we provide those money. Unfortunately, as earlier Hamid talked about it, since this administration, new administration, we have come and what happened, Iranian government, they're able to sell oil as before. And again, it's providing a lot of money to them. That was part of practically, you won't see that much on the news, but Iran is able to sell a lot of oil to China, to Malaysia, and to the black market and gain the money again. Therefore, this is what we are talking, that if the current administration, they just not to appease mullahs and practically to stay with the Iranian people, that will actually help the Iranian resistance. Thank you.
Well, you got some firsthand experience. We've never really asked you about this, but I know in your bio it says you were arrested once in 1980, and after that you were forced to leave the country.
Yes, I'm from Mashhad, and then in that time I was against Khomeini. That time Khomeini was the supreme leader, and practically they arrested me. And then practically in that time, it was really, really hard to see the torturing and how they, practically the prisoner, how bad was the situation in Mashhad. But to make it short, I was lucky to escape from Iran. And then I went to Turkey in 1986. I went to Turkey. And then after that, I was very lucky to come to the United States. But since I've been coming to the United States, I realized what freedom means, what democracy means. I mean, it takes me 1 year to realize that I can say something against the United States president if I don't like some policy and I'm not going to be in prison. I couldn't believe that, that I have that freedom in the USA. And over time, as I learned the culture, and I really, really, enjoy how freely we can talk about what we don't like or what we like. And this is, to me, is really, really, really good value for human rights. We, as a human, we need to be free. We need to be able to trust each other. We need to be able to talk to each other. And I really enjoy the life I have here. I'm married here. My wife, Kim, she's RN, and I have two kids. My son is graduating from Sac State Communication, and my daughter also, she's RN, and she's working in the hospital. And I'm really appreciated this opportunity the USA provided to me. I mean, I never thought from Iran prison and my future is going to end up in the United States and have a good life, and also be able to be as a human rights activist and fight against this bad government in Iran. And practically, and again, thank you so much to you today to give me a chance to be on your program.
Well, we're happy to bring this to people because it's pretty difficult unless you know someone. If I hadn't met you, this would be a difficult topic to cover, because I don't think it's covered all that well in our country, and I don't even know who I would have called. So I think you provide valuable insight for folks. Tell me this too. You have the Organization of Iranian American Communities in Northern California seems to be pretty active and quite large. Is that unique around the country, or are you just part of a much? I know you're part of a much larger organization.
Yes, we in the United States, we have an organization called OIAC, Organization of Iranian American Community. That organization practically is all over the United States, more than 40 states we have organizations. That all of us practically we are looking for the government change in Iran, regime change in Iran, and all of these organizations we are connected together, and we are politically we are active. In California, we have two organizations, one in Northern California and one in Southern California. We are very active, and we all, as I mentioned, we are pro regime change. But we, as Hamid, my friend, mentioned earlier, we don't want any foreigner money. We don't want any military, foreign military to impact Iran. We think the best solution, especially now we can see the regime changed by Iranian people. Practically, we need to fight ourselves to get to the democracy and freedom. And one thing, as previously you were talking about, that when you make the revolution, there is a chance of risk. Absolutely, you're right. We have seen all the revolution, most of the revolution, it didn't go to the right way. And practically, this is one thing we need to be very careful when we make the revolution. Practically, there is a lot of risk, and we have to be very careful to minimize those risks, practically, to get to the better result. But go back to your question, the Iranian American community is very, very active, and is practically is covered in more than 40 states. Here also, I would like to mention that we try to talk to the Congress members and their staff, and practically, I would like to hear. To really appreciate Congressman Doug LaMonto. He is continuously supporting the human rights in Iran. And, you know, when we have the resolution, for example, Resolution 118 or Resolution 374, which they speak about regime change by Iranian people supporting the uprising, practically Congressman Doug LaMonto, he is really always he's supporting the freedom for Iran. I would like to appreciate that also.
Why is it, do you think, the world community is so slow to react to what's happening in Iran? We see bits and pieces on mainstream media about it, but it's not getting a lot of press. Why do you think that is?
If you remember last time when me and Hamid, we were in your show, we mentioned about that. The resistance units in Iran are expanding, they're growing, and then practically there is a resistance unit which in last July we had our annual meeting, and in that annual meeting more than 5,000 members of this resistance units in Iran they attend that meeting. This meeting was virtual meeting through Zoom. And then there was more than 30,000 Iranian also from all over different countries they attend that. Therefore, in that was a good news. Now the good news is regime change. Today I have a good news for you that the regime change in Iran is coming, and practically there is no way to go around it not to happen. It's going to happen. Therefore, in this case, what I would like to say is the line of appeasement. Unfortunately, in media is strong too. And then practically in media, you will see that they are not, they don't, the focus that suppose if, you know, what happened to negotiation? What kind of news shall we put that not to impact negotiation? Therefore, when in some media, that is the line that practically that approach they go. Therefore, it will be very hard. But the good news is right now, I think some reason is we have a lot of huge demonstration by all Iranians for all different ideas that, for example, happened in Canada, happened in Los Angeles, in Washington. And we got some good, we got very good coverage by media regarding to the Iranian
people. That's good.
That other people, they are also the active, yes.
Well, good. They should be covering it. It's about time. It seems like it's one of those things that would it should fit into their narrative. It's being. I mean, this revolution. I've always been, I guess, kind of surprised by it that it's being led by a woman in the Middle East. I mean, that alone ought to be noteworthy. You'd think that would put you guys on the front page of everything all the time, but. That seems to elude most people. I bet you if you went to most Americans and you said, hey, I'll give you $20 if you can tell me who's leading the revolution in Iran, and just gave them the choices, which are now popular now, you know, a man or a woman, right? Just the two big ones. And I'll bet you money they'd get it wrong, which is kind of sad. But Miriam Rajavi is a really – she's a very nice – you can tell she's a very nice woman. She isn't an angry, you know, bitter screamer. Her speeches are wonderful. I hope people go online and take a look at that. We've linked your your website on there. The IAC NorCal is on there, and there's quite a bit of coverage. If you're on Twitter, go look on that. It's all over the place, and she's quite the force. She seems amazing. I'd like to see her one day in real life. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. Our guest is Fred Dasmalchi. We are talking about Iran and the revolution. That is what it's going to take, too. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, that's how it gets fixed. We were, Fred, we were chatting on the break. The people leading the revolution were mistakenly labeled as a terrorist group. That was, I can't remember if it's the last time we spoke with you or once before, but we can't think of the name of that group. What did you think it was, Bill?
I can't remember. Go ahead.
Is it about MEK?
Yes, MEK. That's it. What does that mean? What does it stand for again?
That is the People Organization of Mujahideen South. That is the main Iranian organization. Therefore, a long time ago, when during the Iranian government had the president that time, of course, it was elected president. We never had the election in Iran. Therefore, he came and gave a message to the West that I would love to negotiate with USA and practically practically, you know, I would like to have a dialogue with the whole nation. And then in that time, President Clinton, he was in charge. And then practically based on the meeting, the Iranian government in that time asked the U.S. government, if you want to start the negotiation and all this, can you do a favor for us? Can you put my main opposition, can you put as a terrorist group?
that's right.
Clinton administration in that time to appease the mullahs. There is a documentation. I have a documentation that LA Times provided in that time that some of the senior member of the State Department, they mentioned that the base to appeasing the mullahs, practically this word, we are going to put Iran in opposition as a terrorist group. Therefore, in that time, they did that. And what happened through the process, the Iranian opposition, they practically sued the department and said that, what is your justification for putting us on the terrorist group? And that time, there was a big battle against the Iranian opposition and the State Department, and it takes some years. At the finally, the court come up with a statement that based on the information that the State Department has provided, that this group has not done anything against West, and there's no any documentation that these people have done anything wrong. And they asked the State Department in 6 months to provide if they have additional information. If they don't have additional information, therefore, practically, we are going to remove them, the court. And exactly, I remember, it was after 6 months, it was a Friday. And in that Friday, actually, Hillary Clinton, she was the State Department, charge of the State Department. Exactly at the last day, which was Friday, she practically removed the Iranian, practically opposition, MEK, out of the list. If I want to connect that to today, we have the person who is in charge of the State Department regarding to Iran is Mr. Robert Mollie. He has got very good connection to the Iranian lobbyists. And as a matter of fact, the Iranian people are really, really upset, and they don't like this guy. No Iranian that support the regime change in Iran like this guy who's in charge of the State Department of Iran. And he had a meeting about, I think, 5 weeks ago. Suppose that meeting is going to be by Iranian, meeting some Iranian opposition. But it wasn't. It was member of the lobbyists from the Iranian government. And I can send you that documentation if you want to. Therefore, that against all the Iranians inside Iran and outside of Iran, they said, this is really bad policy. It's going back to the policy of the appeasement. And then practically, when we are talking to, practically my friend Hamid is mentioning about, we are talking about line of appeasement and all this. What we are worrying right now, to be honest to you, the people of Iran, if you let me, I can explain in 3-4 minutes why really the revolution is going to happen. But what we're worrying about that through the process, we are going, if you're going to see the same policy from the State Department again. I mean, that's what we are talking. If they don't want to help us, that is their decision, the State Department, this administration. If they don't want to really sanction the Iranian government, I wish they'd do it. But the problem is with the State Department, we are worrying about that through the process. They practically keep some kind of good line for helping Iranian government. And that's why we are asking to practically to be neutral. If you're at least if you're not helping the Iranian resistance, if you're not helping us to change the Iranian government, at least the State Department stay out of it. Not to hurt us. I mean, look at the last administration we had. They did a really good policy against sanctioning the Iranian government. They put the maximum pressure to sanction the Iranian government. We really appreciate that. But this administration, unfortunately, is not doing it and is doing opposite. That's one of the worries that we are worrying about that. And you practically saw your question was talking about the Obama administration and the money they gave. But as you can see how they have been connected all the way to today. Practically what we see is 40 years of State Department, some part of State Department who are in charge, that they are actually, they just want to appease these mullahs or sometimes they call them these mullahs and moderates. They look at the, some part of Iranian government. But this group is better than that group. This group, let's focus on supporting this group. The Khamenei is bad, but there is other group in Iranian government that they are better. What we're trying to say, these are not true. These mullah people, they're all of them bad. There is no any group of them that we can use to say, you know, and that's what you love to stop, practically.
Right.
So there's not the good mullahs and the bad mullahs. They're just the mullahs, yes. All bad.
They're all bad. Practically, from that call, from these people, nothing good has come for Iranians, or for their best, or for anybody. The only thing they have seen, as you mentioned, just destroying.
It's interesting.
I can prove it to you why the government of Iran is going to change. And this is, nobody can stop it practically. I had a two good conversation last two, three days with Iran. I can share with you if it's okay.
Yes, please.
Sure.
One of them, it was one of my friends. He just came back from Iran. He was in Mashhad and Tehran in two, three months. He mentioned to me that I asked him. He's my friend. He used to be my roommate. He's not politically active, but he has to go to Iran, and he came back. I cannot go back to Iran. I have not been in Iran for the last 35 years. But my friend, he went because he has to go. Some family issue was in Iran. And he said, for example, there was a breakfast package. He said, we went and we bought for 7,000 2 months, he said. He said, I went to get the same item from the shop. After 2 days, it was 9,000 2 months. Same item in 2 weeks was 14,000 2 months. This is like a milk, practically. It's like a buttermilk. Therefore, as you can see, how much the price, this is in Iran, is increasing. And then I asked him, what about your safety? He said, even though he was not, because he said, I'm an old man, I couldn't go to the demonstration, but he said, twice he was almost attacked by those moral police or by different kind of police. And he said that's become very normal for the people. The police, they come, and whoever on the street, sometimes they attack them. And then the next question I asked from this friend who just came from Iran, I told him, what about the dollar? How much the currency of dollar costs right now? You know, 3 months ago, each dollar was about 30,000 2 months. And we know right now in markets, it has changed from each dollar, $1 from 30,000 2 months to 36,000. But he said when he was trying to get some dollar, he said it was 40,000 each dollar. It shows how bad is the economy in Iran, and it's getting worse and worse.
Oh, boy.
And
yeah.
Practically everything in Iran is based on the dollar, the value of the dollar. It means that when it goes from 3 months, $1 from 30,000 2 months to 40,000 2 months, that means that everything increased by 33% in 3 months. That's kind of relationship. Therefore, the way I can look at it, this kind of economy has been going on for a long time. And then that's why there's no way to Iranian government is not able to fix this problem. The other conversation I had, regarding to practically, you know, as the people are standing in Iran, against so many cities, for example, as we know, about 277 cities standing. But it's not only the people are uprising. You know, you saw that in universities, more than 140 universities are on strike against the government. You have a teacher union. You have, right now, last 4 days, you have a truck drivers also, which is in six states they started and going to expand it. They are on strike. Practically, it's all over Iran and Baluchistan and everywhere. But what was interesting for me, this news my friend is telling from Iran based on the conversation yesterday, actually, that in Tehran, very soon, all the shops are going to be closed. And where I'm from, Mashhad, very soon, next month, there is a plan, all the shops in the city of Mashhad and other cities are going to be closed. That practically, it means that this revolution is happening and is expanding, and practically is getting more spread and getting to the different area. And Iranian government is not capable of solving any problem. And as we go forward, practically, the life is getting harder, and the Iranian government, go to the Iranian government option. This is the people situation. Go back to the Iranian government option. Iranian government, right now, they have about 50,000 forces in Tehran only. Out of that 50,000 forces they have in Tehran, 40,000 of them from Basiji and from IRGC, which is Iranian Revolutionary Guard. Right now, Iranian government maintains 50,000 military all the time in Tehran. Another, that 10,000 is different kind of the, like a moral police and all this different kind. This is 50,000 people. And Iranian government, they cannot give anything to the, back to the Iranian people, because what happened, we saw the uprising in 2019, November 2019, when there was an uprising in that time, in period of 4 days or 5 days, they killed 1,500 of unarmed protesters. Therefore, the Iranian people, they will see that all this uprising they have done before, they never gained anything. And always there was more pressure on Iranian people, more execution. That's why we see in one side the Iranian people, they will see no hope from the government. And the other side, from Iranian government, we see the only option they have is to press more, execute more, and that's the option. That's why when you look at it, by expanding to the truck drivers, the shops and markets in so many cities, people will get more radical and more radical. And that's what I'm trying to say. There is a good news that that will be regime change in Iran by the Iranian people.
That's awesome. It's nice when you see people not go run and hide. You know, it's at some point stand and fight is the option, and run and hide has not worked over and over and over again. We have to take another quick break. When we come back, though, I would be interested to know if the people in your organization here in the U.S. are seeing any support from the youth in this country for the youth in Iran. Are they even aware? I think I know the answer, but I figured I'd ask the expert.
Yeah.
We'll be back with our guest, Fred Dasmalchi. I found a great song for the mullahs. Actually, to Messina, they did a terrific song about the mullahs a long time ago. We used to listen to it. We didn't know what it was about back then, but now we do. So you can find us at We the People Radio.
.us.
That I am not the same as you. Now I can't conceive, oh Lord, of what it is you're trying to do. With those angry eyes, well, I bet you wish you could, cutting you down with those angry eyes. What a shot you could be if you could shoot at me with those angry eyes.
There's one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys. You gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
I don't know if they drink whiskey in Iran, and I don't know if they have horses who like beer, but I think that would be a great ending.
I'm going to say no and no.
Ah, darn it. I thought that was the perfect song. Probably not. All right, Fred, I've got two questions for you. I'm curious about the youth. I'm curious if there's a counterpart in the U.S. that feels for their compadres overseas. And it was interesting because our engineer is a younger person, and he was saying that he was unaware there was a revolution until like 4 days ago. And I thought,
yeah,
obviously they're keeping that pretty well hidden.
Yes, you know, some of that they will go, maybe we are not doing a good job, maybe we need to be more active, you know. One thing.
Blame yourself. Good answer. Yeah. Just fall on the sword, but there. It's Fred's fault. No, I mean, I think that they're not telling people. Liam, how did you even hear about it?
I want to say I heard about it through TikTok. But, yeah, I mean,
The Chinese screwed up and let it slip through?
They let it slip through. No, I mean, there hasn't been a whole lot of media attention unfortunately.
And were you aware that the bulk of the country is under 30?
I didn't know that either. That caught me by surprise. I mean, it makes sense. I don't know a whole lot about Iran's history, but I mean, as I've...
May I ask you, watching TikTok, what was the topic? What was the conversation about? I mean, what kind of information was providing? Because in TikTok, we have two groups. The one group, they are practically the... Some Americans very much left that they're thinking, USA is trying to practically do something in Iran and trying to change the direction that way by telling, no, this is propaganda by USA, there's no revolution in Iran and all this. That's very strong. And then there is a other group that they're trying to say, no, that's not true. This is not the US propaganda, and it's practically happening in Iran. That's why I asked you that question.
Yeah, you have to be able to separate... truth from fiction on TikTok. I think it's
what was the context though?
So, I mean, fortunate. I mean, I don't think a lot of people understand like how powerful the tool TikTok is. It was just someone's like filming from their window as there were like riots in the streets and there was gunfire and like people screaming. I mean, it was like scary, but it was just firsthand video. We don't see really major media publications in the States, at least, talking about it, but, yeah, I don't know.
Unfortunately, you're right. After success, that's a good thing you watch. And the things about it is, unfortunately, because of still we are negotiating with Iranian government or government, still they have not closed the negotiation with Iranian government, and that's why practically they don't want to show those kind of practical video for the news, the way I understand, and that is for the left. Therefore, they think it's sabotaging the negotiation. And then, practically, but we are hoping as we go in Iran, get more radical, and regime changes become more obvious, therefore, make it more on the news. But as you mentioned, one thing right now is social media is very, very, very important. I mean, we are talking about Twitter, we are talking about TikTok, we are talking about Telegram. These are all the tools that are very strong. And as it become more active, it practically can pass the news to the younger generation.
That's kind of a little bit of a saving grace, and I guess that leads into my next question. I was curious, like in China, they have a terrible time, obviously, with the revolution, just because they're so repressive, but they control so much, and there's such great surveillance.
Heavily censored.
And I understand in Iran there's a lot of censorship, but do they have the surveillance capability like they do in China, where they know what everyone's, doing all the time? Do they have the cameras and all that?
Yes. One of the things, that's a good question, is that those cameras, they imported from China.
Of course they did.
Therefore, when there is a demonstration, for example, we're talking about Tehran, there is a 50,000 Iranian Islamic Guard that spread all over Iran. But the opposition, they decided not to have uprising in one location, they divided to the 64 area. And when you have the protest in 64 different areas in Tehran, for example, same thing is happening in Mashhad, Isfahan, other cities too. Therefore, it's very hard for Iranian government to have its forces in 64 locations, because they don't know which one over they're going to show up. And practically, the Iranian resistance, they decided to split government forces, government Islamic Guard, to all these different areas, and therefore they can do the better job. But before the demonstration, practically, once they decide what area they want to go, they will go and practically, there are a lot of pictures, they will show that they will go and dismantle those cables. There is a wire, there is a post, they will go and those cameras, because those cameras are practically based on the database the Iran government has got, they can identify the faces and come up with a name.
Oh.
And that's... destroy them practically. That's before the area decided to be demonstration, they will try to destroy all those cameras.
That totally makes sense. I mean, they're gonna ID you from those cameras when you go out and protest.
But
so the first thing you do is disable those.
But isn't it interesting when you think about protests? Like, okay, Liam, you can be our third-party neutral observer here. When you think about protests and you think about surveillance, automatically you think about China. Do you think about that in Iran?
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't have either.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah. In Iran, it's very much advanced right now. Practically right now, the 300 members, 3 days ago, Iranian government, they announced that 300 members of their own Islamic Guard has been killed by people.
Oh.
Therefore, we are talking about the high official of Iranian government.
No kidding.
That has been, at least 300, that has been killed by the people of Iran. And what happened is, for example, there was a case that in Sistan and Balochistan there was an uprising, and they realized the officer was very harsh on the people and killing the people. Therefore, they followed him up to see where he's living, and he was living in the north of Iran in Mazandaran. If that's too far from north to go all the way to Balochistan, they're talking about for Iran distance, maybe it's about 1,000, maybe about 800 miles away. He was living. Basically, they follow up him and they killed him. The people, they killed him in Mazandaran. Therefore, if you look at it on social media, there are Iranian people almost every day. Those people who they killed, who are in charge of the cities killing the young people, some people, they will go follow up them and practically take a rid of them.
Hmm. Now, do they have... naturally, in a lot of these revolutions, as they get going, you get a lot of defections from the military. Is that happening in Iran?
That's a very good question. There was the monarchy, some part of monarchy who are living in the USA before. They were telling that practically they have the connection to the part of the military, and they promise if there's uprising, they will come and support the people. We keep telling them it's impossible. The way set up Iranian government, the military and all these people, they are not coming and supporting the people. What happened in the last 2-3 months, we observed that. No, they are not connecting to the people. But what we have seen that some portion of them, they retire from their job, or just practically they leave their job and practically they just go away and they're not connecting, coming and killing the young Iranians. And actually, there is a number, what percentage of the military has been practically not to fight for the people, but they retire or they go away and they don't want to fight. There is some percentage.
They decided that their life expectancy was actually starting to become an issue?
Yes. Actually, 1% of the people who have been arrested, about 30,000 people have been arrested in Iran. Based on the data we have from Iran, 1% of the people who have been arrested, they are part of the Islamic Guard or Basiji or army.
Oops.
Which only 1% of the people who got arrested has been joining the people. But at least I can tell you about 25% of the young people who has been arrested, somehow their parents are from, like their father is a Basiji, and they're related to the Basiji family. And even though this Basiji or military, they support the Iranian government, but their kids, their family, they're young and they don't support it. Actually, about 26 to 30% of them who have been arrested, their family of those Basiji also.
Interesting. So, when you start having the people in charge defect, that's another, put that on the list of ways that they're going to lose.
Yes. But we are thinking, Aaron, as we go, more Basiji and more Islamic Guard, they will resign or practically, because they will see that, for example, their brothers or their family are against the government, and everybody's blaming them, and they cannot stay for a long time. They are going to practically not stand. They are not practically. They will have a hard time to stay on the job,
huh.
And that's what you're hoping.
Yeah,
and that's why I think it's going to happen. When we get more radical and more radical, as I mentioned, when the markets go on a strike, which they're going to plan to do, and the truck drivers already started, and when it gets fast, and these people practically are not going to save the government. They are going to back up. They may not, I don't think they will come and support the people with arm and all this, like, you know, like part of the military or Islamic God. They come and join the people. I don't think that's going to happen. I hope it happens, but I don't think it'll happen because we have a reason, because of the structure of the Iranian government. It's not like the regular military. It's a different system they have, and that's why it's not functioning that way and it's not going to happen. But if it happens, good. Therefore, the regime change will happen faster.
That's terrific. Well, you can't... I don't know. You can't go wrong if you start seeing the people who are keeping those guys in power second guess their decision to keep doing that.
Yeah.
I would like to mention one more thing.
Yes, please.
That, for example, Khamenei in last 2-3 speech, if you listen to his speech, he's asking the people who support him for all these years. I'm talking about a lot other mullahs who they have been getting benefits from the system and they have been milking the people and they have a really good life. He's asking them, okay, come on the radio, the TV show and support me. None of them has come. They are all quiet. They don't talk against Khamenei, but they are not supporting him also in media. As you listen to the leaders of the, of, for example, of the Islamic God or the Raisi, the president of Iran, they're always complaining. Today is the day you've been talking about the other part of Iran, mullahs. That is, today is the day that you have to come and support us. Why you guys are quiet? Why you're not coming to support us? Other mullahs are all quiet. They're all scared because they know that regime change is coming. And they're not practically not supporting the people, but also they're not supporting Khamenei.
Well, that's good enough, I guess. And for people out there that are thinking, well, I don't even know anybody who's from Iran or going there. I don't know anything about it. I'll tell you what, you could do a lot of good just by making people aware of this. I think that, forwarding the things that are on social media. I signed up for the emails from Organization of Iranian Communities a long time ago, and they're really interesting, and it'll keep you up to speed without bombarding you. You guys don't send out, a crazy amount of stuff. I really appreciate the fact that when you come on, we all walk away and we've actually learned something.
Learned a lot.
That you don't hear anyplace else. And I'm sad that we don't hear it anyplace else.
Yeah.
But I hope that the awareness in the San Francisco protest and the one in D.C. are going really well today. I hope that does bring some awareness. And I hope people go ask a friend. Hey, do you know what's going on in Iran?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for giving chat today. Just, I would like to say, if you want to get updated news in Iran, there is the NCRI. If you put in Twitter, NCRI, National Council of Resistance of Iran, it is in English, and they what I'm talking about, the conversation about the details in Iran, they are providing every day.
Okay, well, cool. And we'll have the show posted for you at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back, though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.